Hello and welcome to Thanksgiving week. We are back with you once again, checking in for the first time in a few weeks as the offseason has had its first round of fireworks. The Phillies have made the first big splash of the offseason, reuniting their hometown homegrown ace, number two pitcher, if you really want to be cranky, Aaron Nola. He's back. He's re-signed for a seven-year deal worth over $170 million. In fact, it's $172 million, which is a mere $500,000 off of one Mr. Matt Gelb's February 2023 prediction of 7 years, $171.5 million. Let's welcome in Mr. Matt Gelb of The Athletic. Matt, hi, how are you?
It was such a good prediction, Paul, that I did not immediately remember making it.
It's amazing.
9 months, I feel like that doesn't count anymore.
No, it counts. Stop. It counts. You called it in February. I know things changed. I don't care. I'm counting it. It's unbelievable.
Well, not a lot changed, and maybe that's like a good place to start here.
That's deep.
This is probably a deal they, could have done in spring training. Yeah. And I understand why it didn't get done. The Phillies didn't want to go to 7 years at the time. Noah's camp didn't want to go below $200 million guaranteed at the time. And rightfully so, he takes it to free agency and you get a chance to see how other teams feel about you. And, I know there's been a lot made about him, the reports, and I do believe they're true. And I just don't know how much that he left money on the table to come back to the Phillies. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was a ton of money. I don't think anyone was offering him 200 guaranteed or 30 per year. If I had to take a guess, it's somewhere around the range, maybe like 2 million, per year. Right. So it's not, nothing.
Yeah, that feels right.
But something around there. So not negligible money, but also not, it's not like he took a huge, huge, huge discount to stay with the Phillies. And, in the end, he signs the biggest deal the Phillies have ever given to a pitcher. And that's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, this is, forever. This is a franchise that was, wary of long-term contracts to pitchers, especially free agent pitchers. The Cole Hamels deal was an extension. Technically, it was during, it was like halfway through, I think, his walk year. Was that 6 or 7 years? That's 6 years. 6 years, 144 for Hamels. 7 years is a lot. The Phillies going to that point, it's a lot. But also, it follows the structure of what they've done in previous deals. Like, this should look and feel very familiar to people. Why did they go to 7 years? They knocked the AAV below $25 million. Mm-hmm. And the payroll is high. it's high. Yeah. It's going to
yes,
be
it is.
Probably yeah. one of the, top three or four payrolls in baseball this coming year. They're going to go over the second threshold, I think. I think that's pretty much a slam dunk at this point. The second threshold this year is 257. I think they're going to go over that. I know they're going to go over that. They're going to go over that. They will not go over 277, which is the third threshold. It used to be the highest threshold. Now there's a fourth one because of the Mets. And I do expect them to go over 257. I don't think they go over 277, so that limits them somewhat here. But it still allows them to add the kind of other complementary pieces that I think they'll add. And we can talk about that more in a little bit. But I think the coolest thing about this deal, Paul, I'm rambling, is that...
No, it's a good ramble.
There's a chance that Aaron Nola plays only for the Phillies. And,
yes.
However you feel about him, however you feel about this contract, and I have some thoughts about the contract we can get to. And I think overall, the coolest part of this to me is that he shared a rotation with Cole Hamels for 10 days in 2015. And he almost certainly will be sharing a rotation with Andrew Painter and any other younger pitchers that come up through the system, moving forward. Mm-hmm. And being that link and possibly being the longest tenured pitcher in this franchise's history, being up in the top three, top two of a lot of pitching records in this franchise's history, possibly playing for just the Phillies his entire career, that's pretty cool. And I think it's okay to feel that way, even if you have concerns or thoughts about the contract. The chance for him to play for one team and one team only, it's so rare in this age. And I think it's kind of cool.
Look, I'm right there with you. I don't know what the next couple of years are going to hold for Aaron Nola, right? You look at last year, bit of a disappointing year. You don't know if it's indicative of some kind of trend right now. You know, two of the last 3 years, the ERAs have been high, but he's always been a guy who sort of thrived on, you know, those peripheral stats, the ratio of strikeouts to walks, which is a really big deal and isn't always reflected in ERA. It's always been great. He's always been a guy who, you know, we've said this time and again, is durable, dependable, gets outs, pitches in. One of the things that this deal does is it obscures and prevents us from seeing, thankfully, prevents us from seeing what the aftershocks would have been of trying to fill in those innings, right? Because in theory, you can think about, okay, we'll pick up this pitcher, and we're talking about, you know, not a great free agent pitching market right now. There are going to be a ton of suitors, you know, for the top two Japanese pitchers that are getting posted in Shota Imanaga and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. It was not a sure thing that the Phillies would be, you know, even before signing Nola, be a top bidder on them, or that they would even want to come here.
Right. They're probably pivoting to Jordan Montgomery or Sonny Gray. Yeah.
Okay. And now we have
all right.
Yeah.
And we haven't done this in a while. So, you know, we got to shake off the rust.
I know. I was going to edit that out, but now I'm going to leave it in. Now we have a guy who is, right now, we assume, still reliable for 180 innings. And that's like his floor right now, what you expect of him coming in. You can only say that of a handful of pitchers. And it's not just 180, you know, innings. Okay, fine, whatever. It's 180 quality innings. He's gotten you into the playoffs consecutive years. He's pitched well, for the most part, into those playoff runs. It's nice not to have the bad taste in his mouth of the game 6 loss against Arizona be, you know, the last time we saw Nola. And yeah, you have the chance, you have the cool accessory opportunity of having a guy play his entire career with one franchise. That's cool to me. He's not going to be a Hall of Famer, but you don't have to be in order to get this chance to only play for one franchise. You know, you look at somebody like, you know, like Salvador Perez in Kansas City, right? Like he is a champion. He's somebody who is almost certainly going to only ever play for the Kansas City Royals and is he's probably not a Hall of Famer. But you have a guy now who is a franchise legend out there. Again, not quite apples to apples because he does have that title, but you have a guy who's he's played a long time for one franchise. He's beloved out there. And he will go into, you know, the franchise's, you know, ring of honor or retired numbers, or I don't know exactly what they call it out there, but that is such a, it's such a rare thing. And I'm getting a little old head in complaining about this way, because I think it's, it can sound a little outdated, or like I'm railing against free agency, or that I think it's, you know, just, oh, there's back in my day, this you said, that's not really it. It just, it's a cool thing to watch somebody that the Phillies drafted now be signed to two large contracts and have the potential to carry him through his entire major league career on top of being a really good pitcher. That's really cool to me.
I agree. I think we talked about it. Maybe just you and I have talked about it. I know I've talked about this with other people because I've been trying to canvas, you know, especially early in the offseason when I was actually working. you know, like, what does he get and what would you give him? And do you want to be the team that gives him what he's going to get?
Yeah.
And I've been on the record and saying, is like, I don't know if I want to be the person who gives him this contract.
Yeah.
I have concerns about how it holds up, because whereas the Zach Wheeler deal was paying for future performance and projection,
yes,
you know, a lot of the Nola deal is paying for past performance and reputation. And it's a very good reputation. It's a strong reputation. It's an important reputation as a workhorse. And, you know, 5 of the last 6 years, and the only year was a COVID year. You know, he's pitched 180 innings, and only other one of the guys done that is Garrett Cole, who's the highest paid pitcher ever. So
AL Cy Young Award winner. Yeah.
You know, I do think that given the market conditions and the situation with, in which the team currently resides, this is probably a contract they had to do, right? I mean, like, I do think it's a decent compromise. He got the years he wanted. They got the AAV they generally wanted, from what I understand. And that's not a bad compromise. This is a contract that I had this in my story at The Athletic. I think it's something like the 23rd highest AAV for a starting pitcher deal ever. And by the end of this offseason, it'd probably be the 10th highest current AAV for a starting pitcher.
Lower. Sure.
That's not bad. It's not restrictive. It's not prohibitive. It's not going to prevent them from doing other things in the future. You wonder how this holds up. And
yeah,
you know, he'll be 31 in June. I still think he has, you know, plenty of decent years left. And you do this deal knowing that the last few years are probably, you're probably going to, you know, really have to just grin and bear it. You know, he's probably a 3 or 4, right? You know, by the end of this contract.
Probably, yeah.
And it's funny because, like, when they signed Cole Hamels to the contract that he signed, you're thinking, oh, like, maybe he's going to spend his whole career with the Phillies. Like, it was a...
Yeah.
It was a six-year deal at the time. You know, it was signed in the middle of the 2012 season?
Yeah, it might have been 2012. Yeah, 12, I think, sounds right.
2012, yeah. So you're thinking, oh, maybe he ends up spending the rest of his career here. And Hamels played for, well, he got in the majors with, what, 3 other teams? Rangers, Cubs, Braves, signed with a bunch of others, never played for them. So you just don't know how they'll go. But we'll see. I mean, like, 7 years is a lot. I don't think they're concerned about years 6 and 7, maybe not even year 5. But because of the alternatives in the market, I almost feel like they had to do this. Now, there's a scenario where they're like, let's wait, you know, let's pursue Yamamoto, who no doubt they are interested in. They're interested in him. They were going to bid on him. He gets posted today. Mm-hmm. We're doing this Monday. You get 45 days. You know, he probably signs before those, you know, 45 days are up. But let's say you decide to wait on Nola because you value Yamamoto more. And I think they did. I think they had Yamamoto ahead of Nola because of age.
Okay. He's 25, though, right? Yeah, like 5 years difference. Yeah.
You know, that's a huge, you know, when you're doing your modeling and all these teams are doing a lot of contract negotiations based on these predictive models, and it's smart. The age is a big thing, especially for a starting pitcher like that. Even with the unknown of him never throwing a pitch in the major leagues.
Right.
You know, that the models probably put him ahead of Nola. And so they could have waited on Nola, and they could have tried to, you know, go against a bunch of other teams for Yamamoto. Now, all of a sudden, as they're doing that, Nola signs with, say, the Braves. And now you lose out on Yamamoto. He gets $210 million over 7 or 8 years, let's say, which I think is reasonable. I think he's going to get somewhere around that. And now, all of a sudden, you've lost your 1 and 2, or your 1A and 1B options.
Mm-hmm.
And you're into middle of December or early December, and now you're really trying to figure out what to do with those innings. And I think that's why they did this now. It was a good, decent compromise, I think. I think it's also fair to be concerned about how this deal goes, whether his durability, that carrying trait, how long that can hold up for. All reasonable, but also I can understand why this deal was done right now.
Look, I'm into it personally, and I think there is going to be a time where they pay the piper. You know, we see the Phillies loading up on these deals for good players. It's not, you know, it's not just like they're doing it to do it. I know Aaron Nola is like, he's a polarizing figure on the field because sometimes it can just leave him, or he has those big innings that just sort of let the game get away from him, and it happens. Okay, fine. He's still one of the best pitchers in the world. It's just straight up. He's only made 1 all-star team, but that's not really reflective of what he's done. He's got 3 top 10 Cy Young Award finishes. He's, you know, we talk about it all the time, and it sounds kind of boring, but the durability thing and the ability to just get those outs over a full season, not have to share that spot in the rotation with another pitcher, barely ever. You know, how many times are we seeing these teams have to cobble together a sum of 180 innings from three guys in a single rotation spot while also making, you know, making sure they have enough arms of volume to make it through the season? That is one thing you don't have to worry about or have not had to worry about with Nola. Now, he's still 30, right? It's going to be technically his age 31 season starting next year. You don't expect that he's going to be really, you know, top 10 Cy Young Award finish when he's 38, 37, or even necessarily 36. That's fine. But if he can keep that big trait, the thing that you put on the marquee, that durability, I know it's not sexy. It's really not. But it's so important. It's so important to save arm. The cascading effects of being able to rely on a guy to give you six innings a start in the way we're currently strategizing these games, game by game, to reliably get that over the course of a full season and still have a decent amount of gas in the tank for the postseason. It's just so big and so critical to the way this team is built and what they are aspiring toward for these next couple of years. Their window is still obviously wide open. They need to have the ability to, one, get through the regular season without shuffling through 50 pitchers. Have guys who can reliably eat bulk, whether that starts in the first inning or wherever it is. Okay, strategy is what strategy is. This is a guy who starts from, you know, the first pitch of the game. You need to get that. You need to get that through. And then you need to have a guy who can give you quality innings, even if it's only in a four inning burst. You know, durability is great. If he can get you six or seven in the playoffs these days, that's just an enormous bonus. If you can get four quality innings, five quality innings in the playoffs, which he has given the Phillies more often than not, it makes sense to keep a guy like that around. And then you sprinkle on top of it the fact that, yeah, we're getting the reports come out. Yeah, he left money on the table. Yeah, he had quote unquote better offers elsewhere. You know, that's nice. It's not everything. it's nice. It's nice to hear that, you know, and it's a good sort of olive branch to the people who are kind of over Nola. There are people who just aren't going to come around. And I get it. He is frustrating, but at times he's frustrating. On the whole, for the balance of his career, for the balance of each individual season, he is one of the best pitchers in this game. And to reach out and be like, hey, look, let's keep the dialogue open. Let's not let these failed negotiations from the spring hang over our heads. Everybody stuck to their guns. They didn't negotiate during the season. It cost Nola maybe, you know, a little bit in terms of total value if he had had a better season.
Yeah, yeah, maybe, no, if he has a better season, he's making more. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
But he gets the years. And the Phillies are, you know, this is their thing now. They're willing to stretch these out. We don't know what the end years are going to look like on these deals. But what I know and what I take into all of these is I don't think any contract is immovable. It gets harder when there are more years to move, but nothing is immovable. So you have to pay down a little money. Okay. You still save some if that's what your concern is. And then you have the ability to open up a roster spot. And again, we're getting so far down the line. It is not set in stone that Aaron Nola is going to be limping out there at age 38 to, you know, Adam Eaton this. Like, that is not what we're, sorry to the stray for Adam Eaton. That is just not what we're, that's not what we should be thinking about here. We get caught up in the numbers, and they're big numbers. You don't typically think that you give, you know, 170 million to a guy who put up a 4.5 ERA in his walk year. You know, okay, I get that doesn't sit so great. But when Aaron Nola is at his best, he's a $200 million pitcher. You hope you have that for a couple more years, and the tax, quote unquote, you pay on that is paying him until, you know, he's in his late 30s when it's a little less certain that he'll be as good or as durable. And
the one other thing, too, that we know is that, you know, These deals look a lot different 3-4 years down the line. Like, let's take so Bryce Harper, for example, right? Bryce right now, and this is from Kotz Contracts, on which Baseball Prospectus now hosts, and it's an invaluable resource, and it's great. Mm-hmm. right now, and I hope this is totally up to date, I think it is, he has the 41st highest AAV in baseball history. That's not current AAV, you know, among current contracts.
First.
But like, you know, Nola's 24.6 million AAV come 2028. Maybe that's just like a drop in the bucket. I don't know. Like, we don't know where the sport is headed or what pitchers are going to be valued at by then or, you know, whatever. But let's be real. The most important years of this deal are the first 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And the Phillies are built to contend right now. They are spending a lot of money to try to contend right now. They got within 2 wins of a championship 2 years ago. They should have won another pennant this past year. I don't think there's like that much that needs to be changed as a whole for this roster, and people might get upset with that take, but I you know, I'm not saying you totally just run it back, but I think the, you know, the pieces are the pieces. You are, you know, you are what you are right now, given some of the deals that you've given out, given, you know, the lack thereof of like impact sort of prospects at the top of your system. There are guys that are coming, but probably not, you know, really this coming year in 2024. So you've got to really lean into these high payrolls for these next few years. That's just how you're built.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll worry about 2028 if and when it ever arrives on this planet. So let's think about the rest of the roster being built around Nola, being built around some of the other guys who are locked in. We have a good idea, again, that this team is, you know, like you were saying, basically getting run back, which, okay, good. They made the NLCS 2 years in a row. Hello. If you were alive from, you know, 2014 to 17, this is a good thing as opposed to the alternative.
2012 to 2021.
I'm trying to shorten the window of painful memories here. But most of the team is coming back. I think there are still a couple of open questions, right? One of them on the offensive side, just to switch gears a little bit, is in the outfield, because there's still something unsettled there to me.
Yes.
You know, we talked throughout the year about Brandon Marsh and how his usage was just it was a little puzzling for a team that outwardly said, yeah, we believe this is an everyday guy. We believe that he's a big contributor. He would come up with some, you know, in the playoffs and in the regular season, some big hits against left-handed pitching. Looked like he could hold his own. Still not really certain if that's what they're going to do, if he's actually going to play every day, or if there's something else they might be looking at in left or center field. Jake Cave was not just tendered a contract, but guaranteed his contract for the coming year.
I don't know if it's fully guaranteed.
So, all right, let's actually work this through here, because this is where we get into roster minutiae. And I love
this
stuff.
I need to get the deal. I'm still waiting for the actual language of the deal.
The way it looked like it was reported is among the slew of, you know, announcements leading up to the arbitration contract tender deadline, which happened later last week, it came out that Jake Cave had agreed to terms on a contract for 2024. Now, things get a little hazy when we talk about guys who are pre-arb, who reach agreements that like aren't multi-year, or, you know, not in January or February as we approach, you know, some of these hearings. And the language of these announcements can sometimes be a little bit iffy, right? Around the same time, Dylan Covey and Garrett Stubbs were also announced as being guaranteed money for 2024. They each got $850,000. Cave was guaranteed $1 million. Where things get a little uncertain is whether this is, like we're saying right now, and some of those contracts are split contracts, by the way, so there's prorated stuff that goes in if they're in the minors, right, and blah, blah, blah. What I think we're looking at here is, I'm going into this assuming that Jake Cave has been given a major league deal. 40-man spot is assured. He's on the team and will start making $1 million when the season starts. Yeah.
Yes.
And that is locked in, where if he is DFA'd, released, taken off the books in some form or fashion, that is his money for 2024. Like, he will make $1 million.
It's possible that if they made a move in spring training that he wouldn't be guaranteed all that. But I do want to provide some context here. And I actually had to think about this myself. Uh-huh. Do you know what the major league minimum is going to be this coming year? Upcoming
is it
year?
Like 760?
740.
740. Okay.
So, like, I'm not saying $1 million is nothing, but to the Phillies, right. It's
right.
Basically nothing.
Right.
And that's
yeah.
crazy to say that. And like Covey and Stubbs get $850. I mean, that's like barely above the league minimum. And I do, you know, Covey as for now, again, staying on the 40 man all winter. I do think that that's going to happen. So mm-hmm. that should have the tender decision should have hammered that home. But I don't know. Like, I do think there's different language in some of these deals. I'm still waiting to get the language on all three of those deals because I am curious. I want to know some of the details. But there are some stipulations with like these arbitration deals. Sometimes they're not fully guaranteed, and also there's this termination pay thing, like in spring training, like you only owe, if you cut him by a certain time, you only owe him like 1/6 of the salary or something like that. I don't know. Again, though, like I don't think that the Cave decision has guaranteed him a spot on the roster come opening day or guaranteed him $1 million yet, as far as I know.
Okay.
And also, like, you know, I know this might seem like forever ago. Remember, they did sign Josh Harrison last year. And I forget what did they guarantee him? Like $2.5 million?
Yeah, something small like that.
You know, and they probably held on to him for too long, but they did end up cutting ties when they just were like, this isn't gonna work. So $1 million, I don't think it's really going to hinder them from making a decision if they're like, well, we got somebody who we think is better. But I think in the broader terms of the roster, as you're getting to, like, the, you know, if you are running it back generally with your core players, and I count about, I don't know, like 18 to 20 players that are pretty much guaranteed spots on this team moving forward, you can improve around the edges. And I think that's like kind of where they go now. Like the bullpen, I do think they'll get another reliever. I don't believe Dave Dombrowski when he says that they're pretty much set offensively. I don't believe that. And that's not to say that I believe they're going out and getting another big bat, because I don't think that either. I do think, though, that they could look for a better complementary right-handed bat, you know, maybe one that plays the outfield or could be a fourth outfielder, sort of bench bat type. There's not a great – the free agent market for hitters this year is horrible, like actually bad. So I wouldn't be surprised if they try to trade there. Now, I'm sure many teams are looking at that too. So I do think there's spots where they can really upgrade around the edges and make this just a better, deeper roster. And I think, you know, moving forward, like that's probably the mission the rest of the way. I mean, like they got their biggest business done, I think, before Thanksgiving here.
So then in terms of thinking of the next addition or next couple of additions for this team, in terms of that payroll that we were talking about, right? Like on Fangraphs, they have another basically invaluable resource called Roster Resource that I lean on very heavily. They do a good job of estimating payroll and all the things that go into it. You know, we're talking about hidden costs like benefits and other things that all go into luxury tax payroll for the competitive balance tax. And currently, as things stand, based on some of the projected arbitration numbers that have still to be decided, you know, we're talking about guys like Ranger, Greg Soto, Jeff Hoffman, Alec Bohm is ARB eligible for the first time. You know, those are some numbers that are going to come in. Nobody's going to be making $10 million among that group, but, you know, we'll have a couple, you know, multi-million dollar figures for this coming year. Currently, the Phillies sit at an estimated payroll of $252. Now, we were just talking about the tiers of the tax, right? So the baseline tax for 2024 goes up $4 million from last year. It's $237 million. And what is it? $277 million begins that 42.5% surcharge on whatever is over that.
It's right, just it, another the 257. 257 is that is the second tier. And I think if they're at, yeah, Fangraphs roughly has them at 252, and it's not like a set number because it changes during the year. And there's a lot of things that go into it, like you said, but if they're already at about 252 on there. I mean, they're going over 257. I've been told that they're willing to do that, that they're probably going to do that, that they're going to have to do that essentially to make this work.
And so then we would think maybe it wouldn't happen this winter, but it seemed like there was, for the right guy, flexibility to go over that next level. I don't know who that would be. I mean, that's another huge deal.
The third level, 277?
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, I know everyone wants to talk about Yamamoto, and I'll spend just a few minutes on it. No, I don't think they're going to sign him in addition to Aaron Nola. I don't think it's realistic.
Okay.
It's interesting to use, there's different ways to use words here, and it's, I'm interested to see how the words have been used. Okay. But like,
okay.
So like, you know, I'm interested in losing weight. I'm interested in getting a big raise at work. Oh, I'm interested in global peace. I would love that.
Yeah.
The Phillies might be interested, and they are interested in signing Yamamoto. I think there are significant barriers to that happening, and I thought that even before signing Aaron Nola, like it's not going to happen now, okay? Because there are other order of business that we haven't even gotten to, and this isn't really relevant to 2024. It is that they are really, really interested, from what I understand, in extending Zach Wheeler.
That's
cool. He's a free agent after 2024, but those are the kind of conversations that you don't have until spring training. You don't want it to affect your tax number for this year, right? So if you had those conversations in spring training, I believe you can treat it as a separate extension, and whatever his new AAV is, you know, would not kick in until 25, I think. So let's say, again, in our fantasy world, like you're signing, let's say you're signing Yamamoto to a $200 million plus deal. And now you have a pitcher in Nola who's got $24.5 million AAV, basically. You have Yamamoto who's, I think it's going to be close to 30 a year. Like, I do. Like, I think he's, gosh, I mean, 7 times 30 is 210. And I think that's totally in his range. So then all of a sudden you have Wheeler, whose current AAV is like 23.6-ish. Mm-hmm. Let's say he signs a new contract that's like,
Be a little bit of a raise.
Yeah, it'd AAV. Be a raise somewhere between 25 and 30 AAV. Like, let's say 3-year, 27 and a half. What's that?
Yeah,
3 like and 80. 82.
Yeah.
Yeah, somewhere around there. You have Taiwan Walker, who's making, you know, he's got an 18 AAV for three more years.
Yeah.
That's just not sustainable. This just won't work. Like, you cannot invest, roughly 100 million in your AAV in four starters. Especially when you have a shortstop who's got $27 million AAV, a first baseman now who has a $25 million AAV, you have a catcher who's got 23 for two more years. It's just, and that all this said, like, first of all, there's going to be a lot of competition for Yamamoto. I don't know how mutual the interest would be. The Phillies have not signed a player from Japan ever. There are two players who played for them, so Taguchi and Tadi Gucci, were free agent signings, and they haven't had a Japanese player since 2009. It's like almost 15 years. So the pipeline is not there, and that does matter. Like, there's little things matter. And I'm not saying that Yamamoto would be flying commercially, but there are no direct flights from Philadelphia to Japan commercially. And these little things, like, I do think they matter in terms of pursuing a foreign player. And the Phillies have increased their presence in Japan the last few years, there's no doubt. They actually hired, do you remember Akinori Otsuka, the reliever?
Texas Rangers. I remember him on the Rangers.
Padres, yeah. Rangers. Well, his son is now a Phillies scout.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool.
He played baseball collegiately at the University of San Diego. He's one of their like Japanese scouts. I think they maybe have two now. They really have never had many. he was around a lot during the year. He's younger. I think he's right about the same age as Yamamoto. And I think he's been helping them kind of in this sort of navigate, I guess, some of this. And his dad is a pitching coach for a Japanese team. And I just, there are a lot of barriers here. Yamamoto is going to sign the biggest contract a Japanese pitcher has ever signed, like, you know, outside of whatever Otani gets, and he's not technically just a pitcher. The Phillies just gave out the biggest contract they've ever signed to a pitcher, and even then, you know, had to be swayed to get to 7 years. Maybe it was realistic before, more realistic. I would have given them, like, before the Nola deal, I would have given them like a 15% chance of signing Yamamoto, even if they were like one of the higher bidders. And I think they would have been up there.
That's a decent chance, honestly, all told.
Yeah, 10 to 15%, somewhere around there. Don't know where he's going to go. I know that a lot of people in baseball circles think that the Mets are a really strong candidate for him. There's just so much unknown, right? And like, you need to be able to onboard a guy like that. You probably need to go to a six-man rotation, at least for the first half of the year. You need to hire support staff. It's just an infrastructure that the Phillies have never had to think about or deal with. And there's just a lot to it. And like, I'm not saying they took the easy way out by signing Aaron Nola to a 7-year, $172 million deal, but there's just more familiarity. And for a team that's trying to win right now, immediately, I think that they valued that. They valued the known, and that took precedent for them. So to get over that 257 mark, like, I think they'll get there in terms of payroll. I do think they'll sign another reliever. I think there's some maneuvering, some massaging of some of like the offensive pieces, especially in the bench and maybe in the outfield, like you mentioned, Paul. But I think the rotation is kind of like what you see right now. I think it's Wheeler, Nola, Walker, Suarez, and Sanchez. And I do think you try to add some depth where you can. There are a bunch of like one win type starters on free agency. If you can sign one of those guys to be a swingman, maybe if you sign a couple guys to go to AAA, I do think Mick Abel at some point, you know, will be reasonable, like usable major league depth for them this year. Right. You know, if there's an injury, like, can Mick Abel come up and pitch in rotation for a month during the summer? Why not? Like, he should be at this point. I think that's something that they penciled in. Like, they don't expect him to be making 30 starts in the majors, but like, if they need have a need for a month or 6 weeks, and he's pitching well at AAA, like, yeah, go ahead. Like, that should be, this should be a time where he can be contribute. And then moving forward, of course, like, Andrew Painter factors into the rotation plans, you know, 2025 and beyond. So I think this is their big rotation move, and I don't really see how they could even think about adding another one. If they added another huge contract, they would have to move off of another one. And you mentioned earlier that not every contract is tradable. I don't know how many tradable contracts they have right now. Like, who would they move off of if they added like a $30 million AAV player?
Well, yeah. of course, now I need to come back in and add the asterisk, as we do with everything baseball related. It's movable, not necessarily for something great, to clear the roster space. But to that point, you can move Castellanos. It's doable. No, I think it's doable.
That. I don't know about that.
Well, look.
I think they'd try.
Yeah. And you'd have to pay down some of it. I think we mentioned this a few weeks or a month or two ago, maybe, whenever it was. Yeah. You're not going to get somebody's, you know, top five, top 10 system prospect.
No, but if your goal is, if you're bringing another $30 million AAV player, or whatever, hypothetically Yamamoto, you're trying to just get rid of the money, right? You're just trying to get rid of money. The only way to get rid of all of the money is you're probably going to attach a prospect of your own to get rid of that money.
Well, if your goal is to clear every single cent of it to try and offset, yeah, okay. If we're getting into like accounting tricks, which you would have to in this case, you know, I come at it from the fan perspective of, hey, it's not my money, because it literally is not. And I want this team to, you know, get as many good players as they can, whatever the price tag, if they want to come here. I know that there is a limit out there somewhere, because otherwise they'd just be giving every player that they wanted $30 million a year and paying them and being fine with that. It's just, that's not it. There is a limit out there somewhere. I get it.
Yeah. And we can't complain. I mean, once the Padres shed the money, they're going to shed this off season. You assume the Mets and Yankees will add a little more. Maybe the Dodgers spend some. The Phillies are probably the third or fourth highest payroll in baseball this upcoming year. And if you want to quibble with them not going over you know, the second threshold, which would be 257. Mm-hmm. Or I'm sorry, not going over the third threshold, which is 277. You know, they'll be somewhere between 257, 277. You can if you want. I don't know if I can. Like, I just, like, it's a pretty good commitment. Like, and it puts you right up there.
The Phillies are actually in what I would call a really good spot this offseason. Like, we already knew the team was good. They've been to the LCS 2 years in a row. But they're in a good spot this offseason now already where, and I like this point as it related to Abel specifically. We're probably going to have a couple of opportunities to see these, like, minor league spring training invite, you know, lower rung additions play a part this year. And that's probably what we have to look forward to for the rest of the offseason. Okay, that's the price you pay for taking care of business early. Fine. You live with
that. And for signing, you know, like, multiple large contracts in each of the last, you know, 3, 4, 5 off seasons. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you talk about the, and I don't have good names off the top of my head. I would need to, you know, sit down and actually look at some of this. But, you know, Mick Abel fits in here really well because most of the rotation is set. But if we do, you know, try and look at it from a realistic kind of grounded perspective, you can count on Nola for durability. You expect Nola to have durability. You expect Wheeler to still have some durability. You expect those two guys to pitch, you know, a good amount of innings. Walker, for his faults, you do also expect some durability there. You expect those three guys to, all of them, each on their own, pick up 150 plus innings next year. Where things get a little iffy is where we talk about Ranger over the course of a full season.
The most durable.
Right. And Christopher Sanchez, who has also not pitched a full season in one single role. You expect him to be a starter. What does that look like? You're going to need multiple guys in both of those rotation spots to get that sum of innings. And Abel is also not somebody you expect to pick up a full season of major league innings or have that workload. So he works really well as part of that equation, whether it's 50 innings, whether it's 75 innings, whether we start pushing 100. I don't know if he tops 100. Maybe he does at the major league level. Maybe he does. I don't know.
Probably not. I mean, that would mean there's probably been multiple injuries.
Yeah, like that's probably not great. Or he's had, you know, the most amazing offseason leap and comes into spring, you know, looking like Justin Verlander. I don't know. But you have that total and you plug that into what you expect. You know, Rangers, say you only get 130 or expect 130, 140. Well, hell, if you can add 50 from Abel, it's obviously not that simple and things have to fit into a rotation, blah, 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 blah. I'm looking at it from a really high level here. You add in McAbel, you start to get him some of that work, start to get him accustomed to the major league level. Well, hey, now you've figured out 4 of your 5 rotation spots from a rough innings total. You know, we're at a point where things are continuously just going to get less and less sexy with the additions. I think I would love to see somebody like Yamamoto or Imanaga or, you know, I just one of these guys who, you know, could make another real serious impact. We're spoiled.
Only 1 7-year pitcher contract per offseason.
Right. And if that's our floor now, and this is 3 off seasons where we've just kind of had maybe honestly more. It's been a long stretch of years where the Phillies have just been like, yeah, let's get this guy. And they're getting them. And I know, like, that I would love to have some more in our pockets. There isn't really a whole lot of space to do that without some complimentary moves, and maybe you make it work. But yeah, they're in a good spot.
Right. That's the thing. It's like, okay, you say, okay, let's, we want to add, we want to add another big spot or another big player. Mm-hmm. Where? Like, I'm just wondering, like, who are you replacing? And I'm not talking about the money. I'm talking about the roster and the way it's constructed.
It's really just the bullpen or the bench. It's really just the bullpen or the bench. Maybe center field. Okay. Wow, what are you going to do? Trade for Mike Trout right now? Like, look, as much as I want to tinfoil that, it's not happening.
He's getting traded.
Yeah, it's not happening right now. So that's it. That's what you're looking at. You're probably looking at, you know, a guy who can split duty at you know, left field or center field at the plate. Maybe a platoon guy. Maybe Rojas doesn't make the opening day roster. I don't know. Like, there's
not. Like, they're probably looking for another righty bat who can play.
An upgrade over Chris Pache, I guess. Yeah, like, that's
exactly. Yeah.
That's what we're at. And that's okay. That it is enviable to be at that point in late November in your offseason. If you are that comfortable with so much of your team, which has played out that way with deep playoff runs, you know, the proof is in the pudding here. It's an enviable position to be in. It's a great position to be in. And yeah, I know
and right now that you're in a spot where you can roster for now Pache yeah. and Sosa and Cave and Rojas and say, those are guys right now, but we have the capability to upgrade from those spots, and the cost of getting rid of those guys or sending them to the minors is not great. It's not prohibitive.
Exactly. Exactly.
Same with like Christopher Sanchez, who like, I think it was interesting how they pushed him at the end of the year. Like he did throw way more innings than he had in any previous season. And the results were decent. Like, I don't know what he's going to be, but like right now, like canvas the rest of the league and compare fifth starters. He's probably in the top 10, maybe even one of the better fifth starters on paper right now in baseball, right? I mean, I don't know what he's going to give you, but like, let's say he's 70 to 80% of what he was for that really good stretch. That's a, mm-hmm. that's a really solid fifth starter.
You know, if there's one thing to really be curious and curiously excited about for this year, it's him for me. It's Chris Sanchez for me. Like if we are finally committed to seeing him take the ball every fifth day and to be a starter and to not bounce back and forth, we can't guarantee that as we sit here right now. But if that's what he's going to be, and if that changeup is real, and it looks like it might be real, I am excited to see what he can give you, because that could be the difference between, you know, I don't know if it gets you closer in contention to the division. It sure doesn't hurt. I don't know that the Braves win, you know, 104 games. I don't remember what they won. Who cares?
Braves are having a really interesting offseason. Yeah, they are. Won 104 last year, and they currently have
30 they missed out on Nola.
Their 40-man roster.
Yeah, they missed out on Nola. You know, who knows what that front office is doing at any point in time, because they're so tight-lipped about everything. There's the thought that they're going to do some kind of big move. I don't know.
Sonny like Gray feels like a Brave to me.
Yeah, that makes some sense. I like how the first move was to kind of prey on the new front office installed with the White Sox and just give them 5 bits of 40-man Dreck for, you know, Aaron an Bummer. Interesting, it might be, you good. Know, Aaron Bummer has had some kind of ugly ERAs, but this is a guy who hasn't given up a home run to a left-handed batter in like 4 years or something like that. So just, you know, keep an eye on that. And all they did was just kind of pick up his extra money. Yeah, whatever. All right. So you're preying on that. Look, it puts the Phillies into a better position to contend for the division. Long season, anything can happen. And potentially, maybe, put themselves in the catbird seat of getting a little more rest, getting the chance to have that bye, to not have to sweat the best of three series. I get that they have eliminated the Braves last 2 years. But yeah, no, the bye is not bad for me. I want the guys to get rested. The Braves are the ones who couldn't come through.
No, you make a better point here about the overall health of the division, right?
Yeah.
Marlins have made a change. I don't think, they don't have Sandy Alcantara all of next year, which is really a shame that we're not mm-hmm. going to be able to see him pitch next year. I think they're doing a soft rebuild. I don't know. They're trying to become the Rays, obviously.
Yeah.
Good luck. the Nationals are the Nationals. The Mets, you know, we believe are going to be in some sort of transition type year.
Even if they
still
land
competitive,
like
yeah. right? Even if they still in Yamamoto right now, the starting pitchers right now, the Mets rotation, I guess, projected rotation is Senga, Quintana, McGill, Lucchesi, and Jose Buto. I hope I said that name right.
You did.
David Peterson had hip surgery. I mean, like, they're obviously going to sign a starter, but it's kind of unclear, like, how, they're not going for it in capital letters in 2024. Doesn't mean they're not going to be competitive, because I do think they will be competitive, and I do think they will be active this offseason. And again, I did mention before, I think, they are a very strong potential landing spot for Yamamoto. Mm-hmm. But the overall division, can't expect the Braves to win 104 again. You can't expect the Phillies to win 90 again. But I do think they'll be closer on paper, I think. Phillies probably would be wise to not start off poorly again for the first yes, 2 months of a season for like the third year in a row. And that might knock, you know, not knock them out of the division race by June 1.
What a concept. But
yeah, you make a good point. I mean, the way the division is structured, it's like, how much do you feel like you need to, how much more do you feel like you need to add to your roster? I don't know. Fair question. But I think around the edges, there are improvements for them to make. And I think there's another reliever for them to go get, not Josh Hader, but another solid setup type, you know, that could help you with velocity. Like Jordan Hicks is an interesting guy to me. I don't know what kind of deal he's going to get. There could be a lot of interest in him. So maybe that knocks him out of like the range where they're expecting, but he's interesting to me.
That's a good name to pull from the pile. You know, he's always had such huge velocity numbers, but he's kind of like in that, just for, you know, to indulge a quick tangent, he's kind of always been like Kelvin Herrera to me. Somebody who's always flashed some big, some big numbers and stuff. But the performance has never really matched up with all of the excitement around. Like, he'll throw 104, Jordan Hicks will.
Yeah.
But he'll walk a lot of guys, or he won't, like, you know, he won't have the overpowering, like, prime Andrew Miller type, you know, strike out to walk stuff that you would expect from somebody who's got all the stuff. Oh, he's got all these big numbers. You have to really harness it that way. Like, he's good, but I don't know. Yeah. If he starts getting big numbers just based on the fact that he can throw 117, then okay, maybe you pass.
What if they bring Hector home?
I would love that. I love Hector so much. I love him.
His stuff is definitely ticking downward. I mean, God,
it is.
Holy crap. He is going to be 35 in June. God, that makes me. That's crazy.
Yeah, he's a few more guys.
But he's, you know, really solid last year's, and you wouldn't be signing him to be your closer. You'd be signing him to be your seventh inning, sixth inning kind of guy, depth reliever. Mm-hmm. Probably the role that he should be in.
Yeah, go figure. No, I'd love that. But that is the kind of thing we're talking about, right? Like a 1, maybe 2 year deal.
Because think about their bullpen. It's like, it's pretty much, I don't say it's done, but I mean, you have six guys right now that you're saying are pretty much on my opening day roster. Mm-hmm. Alvarado, Dominguez, Hoffman, Soto, Strom, Kirkering. That's six. And also to your point about innings, like, we also now know that Strom can do the swing role. And if they do need him to be a starter for, say, a month, it works. It can be done.
Dude is unbelievably valuable. I know. Like, I beat this drum maybe a little too hard, but I thought what Matt Strom did last year was unreasonably cool. Like, just absolutely, when they had to get through April and May without Ranger, with like very little in the tank, this guy came out and for four innings at a time every fifth day looked unbelievable, and then still had enough in the tank to be a good reliever down the stretch. Like, that's just, it's fantastic. I'm glad he's back, or still signed, I guess I should say. But yeah, that's what we're looking at here. The team is in a good spot. They're mostly set. There isn't a whole lot to do, and thankfully, in an offseason where they don't have a lot left to do, it's not a huge amount of supply that they're really missing out on. It's not like they're, you know, locked into an aging, bad, underperforming roster while, you know, five superstars still hang out there unsigned. That's not where we're at right now in this particular offseason. So they're in, the math is adding up. All of the equations, not just on payroll, but like the way the roster is constructed, what we're looking to get, like, it's just, it's good. It's good. It may make for a couple of boring months leading up to pitchers and catchers in 2 months, a little less than 2 months from now. But that's okay. You take that. I take that anyway. I'm okay with it.
Last one for you.
Yeah.
Where do you think Hoskins goes?
Oh, man. I've tried not to think too hard about this because it still kind of bums me out that the last chance he had to ride with a really special Phillies team was spent on the sidelines and in the dugout, because he was, to me, the turning point in this franchise. He comes up in late 2017, lights the world on fire, and I'm like, oh man, are we finally back? Like, is this really the thing? And, you know, it probably happened a little bit later than that, but basically, yes, that's where I mark the shift out of the dark years. And so to see him leave, it bums me out a little bit. Anyway, enough vamping. I think there are a lot of places that Rhys Hoskins could go. I think one thing to watch is whether somebody is willing to try and do what the Phillies have done and stretch out and give him a second year. I don't know if that's likely or even necessarily going to happen. I think it's possible that some team could do that. I would look at, you know, I wonder what Detroit thinks about its situation. They have Spencer Torkelson at first base, sure, but Miguel Cabrera is done. The DH spot you assume is opening up, and they are probably going to start shifting into a different kind of gear. They played better in the second half. You know, I've long had eyes on, you know, Tarik Skubal, one of their starting pitchers, as a trade candidate, but they're probably going to keep some of these guys and try and build off of what they had late last year. I would wonder if Detroit doesn't emerge as some kind of interesting pillow for Reese. He could certainly help that offense. You know, Detroit was near the bottom of the American League in a lot of categories. I think adding somebody like him could really be a help. That's one that jumps to mind.
Yeah, I think the Cubs are a good spot for him.
Cubs are a good spot too. Yeah, and that's a spot where he's definitely got a better shot of winning. Yeah.
Right. I wonder, how about all the Brewers stuff, right? Like, be very interesting to see if Corbin Burns gets traded. Yeah.
Well, if they're non-tendering Brandon Woodruff, if they don't feel like they can work something out where, you know, they can guarantee him enough to get that second year in there so that he comes back after injury with them.
There's big money concerns in Milwaukee right now. And they're among the teams that have the uncertain TV situation. And I do think that is like a major thing this offseason with the teams that face that situation. The Twins are cutting payroll. They're in the same situation. Padres are in their own sort of situation, given all of the situation, you know, the owner dying, and they also have an uncertain TV situation, and they are obviously trimming payroll. So, you know, the Cardinals are, I think, in a similar boat. And Derek Gould from the San Luis Post-Dispatch reported that they had not even made an offer to Nola.
I saw that. Yeah.
They're in a really weird spot. The Cardinals are, I think, a team that is confusing to me right now. And I'm wondering what they do this winter, because I think there's some payroll issues there too.
You want another dark horse?
Sure.
I think the Yankees for Hoskins. Because I think, you know, Stanton is still there at their DH and you know, whatever his situation is. I think there's got to be a lot of uncertainty about Anthony Rizzo after his, you know, concussion. Maybe it was even plural.
Yeah.
There's not a lot happening at first base right now for them. You know, that could be something.
The issue is just, you just don't know how much, like, I think it's going to depend on how a team views Hoskins. Like, is he playing 100 games at first base, or is he playing 70 games at first base or 60 games at first base? Because it is the first year back from ACL, and you know, he wasn't the best defensive first baseman before that, so it stands to reason that he probably needs to split his time between first base and DH at least this year, and maybe moving forward. So
he feels like a winter meeting signing to me. So like in a couple of weeks when everybody convenes, you know, early in December, he feels like a guy who goes off the board during that week. Just based on nothing.
Maybe. Anything else on your mind?
I am thinking a lot about what I'm going to eat for Thanksgiving. I am thinking about so much food. That's what's on my mind. This is what we've cleared the deck for, right? Like, the Phillies have taken care of most of their business. Now I can think about all the leftovers I'm going to eat. I can think about all the giant turkey sandwiches I'm going to make. Think about all the cookies I'm going to eat. It's just, it's great. This is the kind of thing I need to put my mind toward lately. So I'm glad I have the opportunity to have my baseball team be in a good enough position where they're, you know, locked in on a pennant contender and they only need to update around the edges. And I can speculate about whether they're going to give a minor league invite to Josh Staumont. Like, that's where we're at. I can focus on
Josh
Thursday.
Staumont. That's you're like in the weeds here.
Yeah, I know. This is what I do. This is how I fill my days. How about you, Matt? What's on your mind as you go back after Nola's press conference this afternoon, as you go back into the cave of PTO?
Yeah, I mean, excited for Thanksgiving. Winter meetings are coming up, so I'll actually probably, you know, be back at actually working. A little surprised they tendered Jake Cave.
Yep, me too.
But $1 million, man, it's just not what it doesn't mean what it used to mean. Man,
that's just where we're at, right? We're just mildly surprised.
They have some 40 man churn to do. And actually, I've heard some interesting things about the pitcher they got from the Rays, Michael Mercado.
Yeah,
hard thrower, like hadn't been a reliever full time until last year. Rays were probably not going to be able to add him to their 40 man, but that's because the Rays always have a tight 40 man squeeze. So I do think that was an interesting pickup for them. There's a lot of guys still on the roster I think are gonna get lopped off. Andrew Bilotti's out of options. Like, does he end up coming to camp with them still on the 40 man? I don't know. They've done a good job collecting like right-handed sort of up and down relievers, right? You have like this guy Mercado, then you have McKinley Moore and Luis Ortiz, mm-hmm. and the big Y, Junior Marte, and Connor Brogdon is still there, still has an option left, I think. I thought they made an interesting trade. Oliver Dunn, he was a minor league Rule 5 pick last year, and you ended up turning him into, you know, two lottery tickets who are a little younger and don't have to go on the 40 man roster. That's all. I mean, like, maybe Oliver Dunn, they could have found a spot for him in the 40, and maybe he would have been a bench player for them this year, and maybe he'll be a solid bench player in the majors for the Brewers. But I think that was a solid win for them. Maybe those two guys they got don't turn into anything, but you got two lottery tickets out of a minor league Rule 5 pick. That's pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, you can extrapolate a little bit and say that the Phillies value Jake Cave as a lefty outfielder more than they thought, you know, squeezing Dunn.
It's like Cody Clemens versus Oliver Dunn. That's probably more of like a similar. Yeah.
And then eventually over Sosa. Set. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Weston Wilson is on the 40, and they just have a glut of like these like sort of bench type utility guys, right? They also have they have Clemens on the roster, they have Rodolfo Castro's on the roster still, Weston Wilson's on the roster. Wasn't very surprised that they didn't add anyone internally to the 40 man. They'll take a shot. If I'm the A's or the Rockies, like, I'm probably taking Carlos De La Cruz. I don't know that they will, but like, I don't know, like, probably worth a shot. I don't know that anyone will. Had a good season, a lot of swing and miss. Like, he's kind of a freak. He needs some time. He's so tall. But yeah, maybe they lose a reliever in the Rule 5, but probably not. There just wasn't a ton for them to protect.
Speaking of which, I think, you know, just to tie off this last string of random thoughts here at the end of this episode, I do think that guaranteeing Stubbs money now means interesting things for Rafael Marchand, who is finally out of options.
And I wonder, think he's getting another option.
Did we already talk about this?
Briefly.
We might have.
I think he's going to get a fourth option. I'm not 100% sure about that. I think he is, though.
All right. I'm just going to say we did talk about this. But
Stubbs has got an option left also.
It's true.
And that is why his contract is a split contract, I believe.
Yes.
Because they threw him a bone by, you know, if he does go to the minors, he would be making, you know, a little more than the typical minor league salary, I guess. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So by signing me that contract again, that is like 100 grand over the league minimum. They have not necessarily, given him the backup job. Would be surprised if it's not him, but also I think they've not set in stone.
Well, there we go. We're all caught up. There it is. That's the last 3 weeks in a nutshell. And
it really
one hour long
that happened. I mean, that's it's like I took a lot of time off, and I apologize to people who are, wanting some Philly stuff. But I just
never apologize for taking time for you, Matt.
I wanted to take some time off. Needed to take some time off, and had been told that Yamamoto wasn't going to be posted until about Thanksgiving. So I'm thinking, okay, like, are any of the starters going to sign before that? And I'm a little surprised the Nola thing came together when it did, but then talking to people and parsing it out, it makes sense as to why it did. The Phillies, I think, were a little more motivated once they realized, that might take a little bit on Yamamoto, and they were maybe a little scared that Nola would sign before they had a clearer picture of what Yamamoto would cost or how interested he was actually in coming to Philadelphia. So I think that's why it happened when it did.
Yeah, and I think the Atlanta threat was very real. Like maybe,
oh, no question. Yes. Yeah,
like this
yes.
was
that was not fake. Yes.
Yeah, part of a competitive tax to sign him now, and you know, give that extra year in order to keep him away from Atlanta. Because we
there
talk about
how team too. I think I'm not sure who it was. It wasn't the Cardinals.
It wasn't St.
Do you believe there wasn't another National League team that made an offer? I wish I could know who it was, and I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, the Braves were a real threat. They were real. Yes.
We talk about how, you know, how tough it would have been just internally to fill Nola's innings if he went elsewhere. Imagine if he makes five starts a year against the Phillies and saves his good bullets for that. Oh, boy. Thankfully, we are spared. Okay, that's it. Let's wrap it up here. No, this was good. It's been a good start to the offseason, even if a bit quiet prior to the Nola, news. His press conference happens later today on Monday as we're recording. By the time you listen to this, it might have already happened. The Phillies are, again, in a good spot. They don't have a lot of work left to do. Keep an eye out on, you know, guys you might remember from a few years ago coming in as spring training invites as the year winds down and the new one starts up in January. We'll be back with you before then, I'm sure. Probably won't be a ton to talk about, but I don't know. Maybe we'll have some fun.
Maybe at the winter meetings.
Yeah, do a little winter meetings thing. Maybe I'll finally get my act together and we'll do like a streamed Immaculate Grid situation or something. I don't know. We'll just try and have fun because the offseason is long and we need to pass the time. But anyway, thank you all. If you're still with us, thank you so much. Thank you as always for listening, for hanging with us, for having a good time as best we can. This is the most boring part of the baseball season, but we're getting through it. Things are looking good. Matt, any parting words before we sign off for another couple of weeks?
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you out there, our ladies and gentlemen, fanatics of all ages. Thanks so much for listening. My name is Paul. We'll be back with you around the time of the winter meetings. Take care till then.